1. The Point of No Return. Hotel Saint-André des Arts, Paris, France. February 1993. The cold, fresh air woke me. The bathroom door opened and Bradley stuck his head out for a moment. He looked disapprovingly over the top of his steamy eyeglasses toward the window that Henry had just opened. Then he retreated and closed the door again. I could hear a police car siren moving away from the hotel. The sirens always sounded to me like they were repeating the phrase, "Uh-oh, uh-oh, uh-oh." It usually amused me, but on this particular morning, it felt like a melodic warning about my day. On the antique mahogany desk lay Henry's leather-bound weekly Minder with his black Mont Blanc pen sitting atop the open notepad. The collection of gallery cards, show invitations, and receipts that had been tossed about the hotel room in yesterday's pre-departure hissy fit were neatly stacked or reinserted into the pockets of his black leather valise. The amazing Toshiba laptop computer I wanted for myself was carefully tucked back into its case, and most of the other contents of his valise had also been restored to their meticulous order. In this way, Henry is a classic gay stereotype. The world could be coming to an end, and as long as everything's tidy, it's all good. He was in the middle of the room, seated rigidly upright on a swiveling wooden stool, a mismatched accompaniment to the compact writing desk. Henry had turned on the desk lamp and looked as though he was meditating in its warm glow, except that his dark brown eyes were wide open and staring directly at me. It was 5:45 a.m. in Paris, time for me to get up and start the day. Henry had been busy. He had already exercised, showered, shaved, manicured, and packed his bags. His dark hair was still wet and the room was chilly, though he was unaffected. I shivered a little, but was glad for the invigoratingly fresh air. Henry sat quietly, breathing slowly. His tanned face was flushed red, even though he was dressed only in his travel underwear, a white silk-knit t-shirt and snug white briefs. I could smell his cologne. It mixed with the lingering odor of espresso and Gauloise cigarettes. Physically, he was not an effeminate man, but he had a grace to his movements and posture that belonged to a ballet dancer. I was accustomed to seeing him with his hair slicked back, not hanging down over his face. Henry swiveled and turned his back to me to extract something from his suitcase. The tight t-shirt defined his angular shoulders and tiny waist. From the back, he looked like a long, sinewy woman. I noticed his dark gray Armani suit hanging on the door of the armoire as he retrieved something from his bag, then spun back around. A bottle of water and a breakfast tray sat on the table in front of him, among a few other items he had set there with the same care surgeons use when arranging their instruments. Henry turned, facing me again, but his mind was elsewhere. He took a deep breath, reached into a wrinkled brown bag, and extracted a large black capsule-like object about an inch long. He took the capsule, forced it down into the finger of a latex glove, and tied it off with a double knot. Then he gingerly cut the capsule-stuffed finger off the glove, free, with his silver grooming scissors, leaving a little excess rubber at the end. Henry dipped the pinky-sized creation into a bowl of plain yogurt, then put it into his mouth and swallowed it whole. I watched the lump as it moved down his throat, under his Adam's apple, and disappeared beneath his collarbone. He took one deliberate gulp of water, straightened his back, and sat quietly again. Then he repeated the entire process. He would do this until he was full. Bradley would do the same, but with just a handful of the heroin-filled breakfast bites. Bradley emerged from the steamy little bathroom, dressed except for his shoes, socks, and suit jacket. He sat down on the edge of the bed and watched Henry's ritual, like he was a student. But he was really just procrastinating. He couldn't see a thing without his glasses, and he had removed them. I was impressed with his bravery. Like me, this was his first trip. I wasn't the only novice. Bradley had volunteered to swallow the last of the capsules, so none would have to be left behind. For a few trips now, other couriers had been chipping away at this last batch of capsules from a stash that needed to be transported back to the United States. That method of transport was being abandoned. Even so, I had learned that men could hold a lot more of these heroin-packed capsules than women could. Henry ate them slowly, probably because if he ate too fast, he might eat too many. If he did that, his system would painfully rebel all the way to our destination, the Blackstone Hotel in Chicago.